This is the Workplace Podcast with your host, William Corliss, brought to you in association with Yellowwood, providers of executive coaching, corporate training and facilitation, your external learning and development partner. Each week, we focus on a different aspect of the workplace. We hear from guest speakers who are subject matter experts and are incredibly talented at what they do. These experts will give you a different perspective and insight to work life, with the aim of empowering you to take a different path to success in all aspects of work life. These perspectives will include career and personal success, leadership, high performance teams, and creating a better work life culture in your organization. Yellowwood, take a different path to success with your career, team, and organization.
Welcome to the Workplace Podcast, and joining us today is Lisa Sun discussing her book, Gravitas, the 8 strengths that redefine confidence, own your own power, and live with self-assurance. Lisa, welcome to the Workplace Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited about this.
I love the book. So we're talking about the UK version of this book. It is black with gold and it has great gravitas. And people are listening in.
It's a very pretty cover. It's a very pretty cover. I always say it's sustainable. You can reuse the cover to cover up whatever guilty pleasure read you're reading on the plane. People will think you're reading about empowerment, but you might be reading the new, you know, Taylor Jenkins read or Colleen Hoover.
And I have to say it is quite the resourceful read. So we're going to talk about this today. When people hear gravitas, and I know from my own coaching experience, and again, from your experiences there, and you were talking about this in the introduction, is sometimes people in performance appraisals, people will be told, you need to have more gravitas. And people are left wondering after that performance appraisal, what the hell is that?
Well, that was me for sure. At the age of 22, I was told Lisa comes across as young and overly enthusiastic at times. She should seek to have more gravitas or have more confidence or presence. And I think it's one of the most anxiety-inducing, ambiguous pieces of feedback you can receive. You walk away from it going, what do I do now? And I wrote this book because so many of us have faced moments of self-doubt or been given confidence feedback, be more confident, and we just don't know what to do. And one of the things I want to do is shift the entire paradigm, the entire conversation about confidence in a whole new direction, because there's hundreds of books written about it, but I think they focus solely on one thing, which is behavior, things that we can see. You know, when someone says, be more confident, it's stand up straight, be assertive, speak up. When you look up the word confident in the dictionary, the Oxford English Dictionary, it has nothing to do with performance, bravado, or swagger. It's an understanding and appreciation of your own abilities. It's a mindset. 90% of the work is how you feel about yourself, how you value yourself. Only 10% of the work is an outward expression. So one of the most important things I want to do with this book is help people understand confidence is a choice and a mindset before it becomes a behavior.
And that's what this book is so good at. It shares stories, it shares the different insights there, it reframes confidence in a very different way. And tell us about that story about Diane then at the very start. I think that's a really good story.
Diane was my first boss at McKinsey, and she was the one that delivered that performance review to me. And when I asked her, how do you get gravitas? She told me to buy a new dress, wear big jewelry and great shoes. That is very offensive feedback, by the way. I was making $43,000 a year, size 18, 20. And she told me to buy new clothes. When I asked her why, she said, Dumbo did not need a feather to fly. It reminded him that he could. So it's not about how I see you or others see you. It's that when you wake up in the morning, you're the first person you have to look at in the mirror and you have to like yourself. I'll teach you how to be good at this job. I can't teach you how to like yourself. And so she said, for me, I put on a dress and it's almost like armor for me. It reminds me that I can do this job. And I think that was a really core insight. And I think that's what led to self-confidence as a mindset before it becomes a behavior. We as adults really struggle with estimating our own value. A five-year-old can do that, by the way. We're born fully self-confident. So a five-year-old could tell you whether the best in the world. But as I know you've read in chapter 2, there's all these forces, 6 forces that hold us back from confidence. So So as adults, we actually have to make a conscious choice.
And that's where you introduce our listeners then to some of the core concepts then. So self-belief, self-confidence, self-assurance, self-worth. Now, some people are listening in saying, listen, they're pretty much the same. Well, how do they differ?
They are interchangeable in a way. But what I wanted to do is really, you know, I think when you ask people about confidence or gravitas, they think it's a state of being. They think it's something you can be. What I'm trying to shift it around is it's actually an approach to living with self-assurance. And what I mean by an approach is life happens, right? There are all these upsets, setbacks, disappointments. At any one point in time, you're going to get knocked off the horse, knocked off the ladder. And it's around how do you, what are the mechanisms by which you get back onto that horse or onto that ladder and keep climbing? And so for me, when we talk about self-worth, self-belief, self-confidence, we think of it as a state of mind or a state of being. It's actually a whole approach that creates a mindset that we can be courageous, that we can actually take risks in life, that we can be more connected and compassionate. And that's a really big difference for me in the way in which we wrote the book.
And I think it's very pragmatic, the book, especially towards the end of the book. There's different scenarios. If we say, for example, dealing with illness or, you know, the pressure of being an expert, different things like that. So we'll talk about that later on. And then you talk about why we should all embrace our superpowers. So if somebody's listening in here, you know, they can't see me here, but I'm doing my Superman or Batman pose. You might be doing your Wonder Woman or Superwoman pose. Like, what is that? What are our superpowers?
Just so you know, William, for your listeners, the book was structured in a way to take you on this journey. It's structured around three parts. The first part is helping people understand that self-confidence isn't purely a behavior. It's a mindset and a choice. And you have to first understand the six forces that hold you back from being confident. You know, you can't solve a problem until you've diagnosed it. I think so much of the time we talk about being insecure or fearful. Well, we've got to double click on that and say, what am I really feeling? Once you buy into that approach around, okay, of the six forces, two of them affect me all the time, or actually all six. I woke up this morning with all six in my head. Then you transition to the second part of the book, which is, okay, how do I truly like myself? And I've asked people in boardrooms, dressing rooms, I own a fashion company, you know, what are you the best at in the world? It's a really hard question to answer. And so in the second part of the book, we did a 1,000-person quantitative study along with 32 focus groups to uncover that confidence doesn't come in one form. It comes in the form of 8 superpowers. Most of us have 2 or 3. My mom took the quiz. She has all 8. She's like, I take your quiz. I'm all 8. 2% of the data set has all 8. But these 8 superpowers, these 8 strengths, they change the way in which we evaluate ourselves. They are the basis of self-esteem. And so I'll get into a little of that in a moment. And then the last part, the third part, which you were referring to earlier, is the playbook. Okay, now that I know my superpowers, now that I know my confidence language, which of the superpowers I bring to the table, how do I own them? How do I talk to my inner critic and outside critics? How do I get new ones? Because that was one of the things you're talking about. We took 30 situations in life and we said, okay, which superpower do you need? We correlate in the data set. If you want to ask for a raise, if you want to sell someone an idea, which of these superpowers do you need? So you can say, hey, I already have that. I already tested into that. I need to believe in myself. I need to trust my own abilities. Or no, I don't. And I now can control my learning journey and say, I want that other superpower. For me, I started the quiz 2 years ago. I had 3 of the superpowers. I now have 4.5 because I've been working on it. And I think that starts to give people a clear roadmap to confidence, right? Because we have dissected it. We've broken it down into component pieces. I can talk a bit about these 8 superpowers because I think that's where a lot of the magic is in the work, if you'd like me to get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into it. And then I might remind people that your mother is up there with Oprah Winfrey. Did I read that correctly?
Oh, well, you
part
know,
of the 2%.
She's up there with a lot of the 2% of people. And you know what's interesting is that the most powerful people in our data set were people over the age of 55. And I think culturally, we've become so ageist to only celebrate youth. And what I find is that people who've had a more experience, time, talent, and treasure, they have so many more superpowers because they've been knocked around quite a bit and they've known how to expand their skill sets in a way. And so one of the things I want people to be aware of is it's about discovering your language, what superpowers you have, but then figuring out where you want to go, Or you might say, you know what? Of those 30 situations, Lisa, most of them are never going to be interesting to me. And so I like myself. I like the two or three superpowers I have, and I can stand firm in it regardless of what society celebrates.
That is wonderful to know. And a lot of this book is about that emotional intelligence, that self-knowing. And then what's really good is that that learning journey that you bring us on. So speaking of the learning journey, how about we go to, first of all, this, before we go into the superpowers, maybe, is you mentioned this before, is we get in our own way. So you talk about the six different ways between deficit mindset, the shrinking effect, the satisfaction conundrum, superwoman facade, the setback spiral, and systemic bias. Like, there's a lot there to unpack. So there's different things that get in the way, don't they?
Yeah. And William, you just gave them away. I have to breadcrumb this so people buy the book and actually get into it. No, I'm just giving you a hard time. I'm happy to talk about the six, but I really hope people do get the book because there's deeper learning in there. What I like to do is, you know, we started earlier in the conversation. If you've ever been around a five-year-old is the purest form of confidence, the purest form of gravitas. They will tell you that they're best at football. They're the best at hugs. They're the best at everything. They don't know how to compare and despair. They don't know how to envy. There's no setbacks or disappointments. They don't think about their flaws over their potential. And what happens between the ages of 8 and 12 in our adolescence is we start to experience disappointment. We start to see our flaws. We become self-aware and self-conscious. And that quickly becomes self-doubt. It forms the basis of an inner critic that we carry for the rest of our lives. Everyone has an inner critic. And the reason we came up with these six forces, well, it's research-based, is I wanted people to be able to decode their inner critic and say, in this moment, what am I feeling? And so these six forces you just described, I'll give you a great example. My team, my head designer, who leads our design team to make fashion, he came in one day and he said, I'm really depressed. And I handed him, we have a little chart with all six forces. I said, which of these six forces? He goes, Lisa, I'm not doing your six forces exercise. I mean, I just want to tell you I'm sad today. So if I'm in a bad mood, I'm like, no. Let's sit down and let's talk about which of these six forces. And he pointed to one of them, which is called satisfaction conundrum. And this is where you tie your happiness or your self-worth to an external marker of success. The easiest way to think about this is for women, I'll be happy when I lose 10 pounds. Or I'll be happy when I get that promotion. And you tie your happiness to a certain external source of validation. Well, if you don't get it, you beat yourself up. It's like perfectionist peril. You just don't feel like you measure up. Or if you do, you're on a treadmill to get the next one, right? So, I mean, so much of the time you're looking at the summit, you don't turn back around to see how much ground you've covered. And so that drives a lot of insecurity and fear in our lives when we tie ourselves to this external source of validation. So I said, what happened? What is it? Why do you have satisfaction conundrum today? And he said, well, I hurt my shoulder, as you know, earlier this year, and I had to step down as the captain of my volleyball league team. And I just opened up Instagram and I saw that the team that I was supposed to captain won the gold medal without me. And I'm not in the photo. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, let's step away from that. Now that I know what's driving your state of being today, can we talk about how abundant your life is? Talk to me about all the other things that are good in your life. I said, well, we're doing New York Fashion Week again for the first time since COVID. We hired a new person that I love working with as a pattern maker. He went back to Mongolia to visit his family. He's from Mongolia for 3 weeks and he got to see his entire family. And he starts smiling and laughing. And I said, okay, you've got a lot going on. This one thing was not the only thing that was going to make you happy this year. And he goes, you're right. Said, well, what are you going to do about it now? He said, you know what? I'm going to go comment on that Instagram post. I'm going to share it. I'm going to text the whole team congratulating them. I'm going to be happy for them. And so one of the things about these six forces is once you understand them, they help you sort through, okay, today, what am I feeling? I'm feeling shrinking effect. I'm underestimating my own abilities against someone else. You know, this is why women will only apply for a job if they're 60% or 100% qualified, but men apply if they're 60% qualified. Like, it's good enough. Let me give it a try. You know, maybe I should apply for that job today because shrinking effect is holding me back. I am pretty qualified for that. Why don't I trust in my own abilities? So we created these six forces as a way to decode how I'm feeling today, but also, as I just shared with you, how others are feeling. Everyone else is going through these six forces. So you can actually have real compassion for someone and say, you know what? I think this is what's happening, or tell me what's happening.
You mentioned it there, the treadmill, but it's the hedonic treadmill as well, isn't it, if I've read correctly? So we're always kind of chasing something, and then that actually makes us exhausted, but it can be mentally and emotionally exhausting as well, can't it?
Yeah. Arthur C. Brooks and Oprah Winfrey came out with their new book on the same day as mine. And I quote Arthur C. Brooks. He's the one that coined hedonic treadmill. What I thought was interesting is he talked about that song, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. And even when you tie your self-worth to something that's external to you, when you get it, you just want the next one. So a lot of women I work with, I'll be happy when I lose 10 pounds. They lose the 10 pounds. They say, well, I think I could lose another 5. And I always stop them and go, can we be happy in this moment? Can we find joy right in where you are right now and not worry about chasing the next marker? I share the story in the book around, I was a consultant at McKinsey & Company for 11 years. And so much of my decade plus time there, I tied my happiness to what the firm thought of me. So am I going to make partner? And I realize now how much I missed out on. I missed out on the joy of doing incredible work for amazing clients, being with these really smart teams of people. And if I could go in the DeLorean Back to the Future style and give my 22-year-old self this book, those 11 years, I really would have seen all the other wonderful things happening around me without being so focused on chasing that next benchmark of success, that next promotion. Because even when you get it, if you've tied all of your happiness to it, it'll never feel like enough. It'll actually make you feel dissatisfied to chase the next one. The alternative, I'm not saying not to have high standards, by the way, we should all have high standards and things we want in life, but we should see the value we bring to the table on our own without that external validation.
That brings me to that part there when you're speaking about the superwoman facade. So we mightn't have time to go through all of these six, but that one specifically, the superwoman facade, then when you're talking about never enough, some people say, oh, I have never enough time, or I am never enough. You know, there's lots of different things going on with that superwoman facade, isn't there?
There is. And we can call it superhero facade for your male and non-binary listeners as well. It's really a general concept around when we pretend that everything in our life is going well, what happens is sometimes we feel like we don't have enough help. So one of the things I love that we quote Shonda Rhimes in the book, whenever you see me succeeding in one part of my life, I promise you I'm failing in another part of my life. And what I love about that is the most confident people in the world will tell you where they're struggling too. Because when you share where you're struggling, it invites people to have fingerprints on the journey. It lets them know that even you struggle with something. It creates a deep connection. But it also means that you're making choices. You're taking priorities in your life. So, you know, one of the things I get asked a lot about is work-life balance. And I said, well, there is no balance. At any one point in time, something in my life is off kilter. But what I do know is I'm spending time and energy on the things I love. So I love that Zadie Smith quote, time is how you spend your love. As long as you spend your time on the things you love, you don't feel guilty about, or you don't feel bad about, or you don't beat yourself up about the things that are not going well in your life. And when we pretend to be superheroes, first of all, it is a facade. It is a facade. And why are we doing it? It's because we're trying to measure up to other people's expectations. When we take a self-affirming inventory of what's going well in our lives, what's not going so well, it's very freeing. And I want everyone to know I'm not a superhero. You know, it always looks better on social media. I always joke, it always looks better on social media. Let me please tell you the three ways in which I'm still working on myself, or I'm still failing on something. And I don't apologize for it.
And that's wonderful then that you're inviting people here to see it as a choice. So again, it's wonderfully honest of you to say, well, you know, it looks like I'm winning here, but there's other places. Well, it mightn't be going so great. And that reminded me of a lady I met years ago, Heidi Bement. She was the head of learning and development in Bank of America. And she said this, you can have it all, sweetie, she said to me, but not all at all at the same time.
Exactly.
That was a wonderful
quote. Well, and that was, I think we have really misquoted Helen Gurley Brown, who wrote the book that led to this question in the 80s and 90s of, can we have it all? I don't think she said we should have it all. What she said is we should have all the choices. And so I think the idea of can you have it all is an unfair mantle that we've placed on people. It's more that I want to have all the opportunities and choices, and then I can make the decisions around what's a priority right now, what's a priority in the future. And that, I think, is where we get rid of a lot of the anxiety and fear and beating ourselves up about not measuring up to a standard.
So speaking of standards, then, this has been recorded in Q4, where a lot of times people are doing their end of year performance appraisals. And if I am a person listening in here and I want to give feedback to someone that they want to have more gravitas, and I wanted to define it, or I wanted to explain to them what gravitas is, how might you explain it then, Lisa, in your words, gravitas?
Well, I think first you have to, and this is where my 8 superpowers come into play. I don't actually think we should tell people to have more gravitas. I know we're about to get into the 8 superpowers. I think what we can do is we can say, hey, to get to the next level of leadership, first of all, here are all of the strengths and superpowers I see in you. This is what I know drives the outcomes that you've created this year. And I think we do have to help people see themselves and recognize attributes that may be different than ours. Half of my team has different superpowers than I do, and I love that. They do the things that I don't know how to do. So I think when in annual performance reviews, I think it's really important to validate the person on, here are the strengths you're bringing to the table. Now, as I look ahead to where you need to stretch and grow and the things that I know you're going to take on to get to that next level of leadership, let's talk about the superpowers I want to see you cultivate and I can help you get there. And as opposed to you need more gravitas, it may be in one of the 8 superpowers, I need you to be more self-sustaining, which is handle criticism better, see yourself in a positive light. Or I need you to be more believing, which is optimistic and positive in adversity. Or I need you to be more performing, which is what I'm doing for you now, a little bit more outspoken, a little bit more extroverted. When we can create dimension to that learning journey, it changes the amount of anxiety and ambiguity there is in that conversation. So I think it's 2 parts. It's as a leader and a manager, how do you help celebrate and say, I see you? One of the things most people want to be is they want to be seen. They want to know that their work is reward, their skills are valued. And oftentimes the scorecard is set by the top in a way that there might be some attributes that are missing from that scorecard. And so how do you celebrate them? But then say, to get you to that next level, to get you to the goals for next year, here are some specific strengths I want to see you demonstrate, and let me help you get there.
And I think that's key. People sometimes give feedback that is too vague, a bit like that element of gravitas there, where we need to be very specific. And here is the goal with clarity of the expectation. I think that's fantastic if you said that.
And it's two-way. So I always say the mentor chooses you. You don't choose the mentor. Make yourself mentorable. So if you're on the other receiving end, and I wish I could go back and give myself the feedback, first things first, and a lot of people have messaged me on social media, on LinkedIn or Instagram, and they said, hey, I took your quiz. You get, even if you don't buy the book, you can take the quiz for free at myconfidencelanguage.com. I took your quiz and I'm interviewing for a job, or I'm going in my performance review. And those superpowers really helped me frame what I believe I bring to the table. It was actually great to have the language to say, these are my strengths. I want to make sure I advocate for them, but also control their learning journey. Hey, these are some skills that I want to work on. Can you please give me feedback? And I think we're really bad at asking for and giving feedback. So much of the time you're like, could I have some feedback? Oh, you're doing fine. Just keep doing what you're doing. It's like being in a store. I'm just browsing, right? Versus, you know, this year, I really want to work on being more achieving, or I want to be more on this. What's one thing I could do better? I love the question, what's one thing I could do better? When you say one thing, everyone has one thing for you, and everyone wants to have fingerprints on your journey. So I used to do this as a young analyst at McKinsey. I'd walk out of a meeting and I'd go to my supervisor and I'd say, what's one thing I could have done better? And they loved that. They're like, you know, next time you need to go slower through the slides, or I think you got too in the weeds on the detail of explaining that chart. You could have just started with what it says and given everyone a chance to read it. You know, you could have said, hey, here's what this chart says. Why don't I give everyone a minute to read it? And it was great because that one thing, I would write it down, I would practice it. And the next time I would tell that person who gave, hey, I worked on it. Did you notice that in that meeting? And they would say, yes, I did. I'm so glad. And I'll say, what's the next thing? Because then all of a sudden you have all of these champions and supporters who say, you know what, Lisa, she's very mentorable. If you take the time to invest in her, if that investment pays back. And so I think it's both sides of the equation, but it starts with, as you described at the beginning, self-knowledge. And that is really hard work when we're busy, we're tired, we're trying to get so much done in our personal lives and our professional lives. That's where this book fits in. I've been described as Mary Poppins by a lot of audiences recently, in that you show up when we most need you. I needed to hear this today. You know, in Mary Poppins, I show up when the kids most need me. Everyone says, I really needed to hear this today. So that's where we fit into the equation around this portion of the cycle of evaluations.
And I love that we've gone into feedback, and that's something that I sometimes do with people, is say, here's a stroke. Here's what you're doing really well. And here's what great looks like. So for next time, here's the stretch. So again, it's that building, that's the constructive feedback. And I think when people hear feedback, they associate with negative feedback. Yeah, I see you touch their chest, they're kind of going, oh, what's coming? I'll tell you a little story. I, many years ago, around 25 years ago, I was in an office, junior employee, and I was asking for feedback. And one of my managers said, it's okay, I'll tell you if you do something wrong. Now, every time that manager came, I was fearful I was doing something wrong, and they wondered why I was so nervous. And I think it's when it comes to feedback and when it comes to confidence and confidence language, which we're going to go to next, it's that intentionality of how we speak to ourselves. So can you tell me, why is confidence language so important?
Well, the confidence language concept is really important because we need to be able to help people build self-esteem. And self-esteem, again, is another ambiguous term. The best form of it is rooted in your strengths and a deep understanding of it. I really dislike the phrase "fake it to make it." You know, I've been on a 20-city book tour, and someone who's known me for 20 plus years raised their hand and said, "I've always thought you were a very confident 20-year-old. I call BS on this whole book." And I said, "I was an insecure overachiever who learned how to fit the mold and fake it. And I hated myself the entire time." And she said, "Oh, that tracks. Okay, that makes sense. That tracks to me." And so I created confidence language. It's like a love language, right? Once you understand what makes you feel good about yourself, what the source of your self-belief should be or is, it changes the way you move through the world. You're not faking it. You're saying, here's what I stand for. Here's what makes me strong. And I think that is something that we don't do enough for ourselves. I've been joking, not joking, actually, I've been saying on the book tour, you know, we've been sold confidence culture as a corporate slogan. So hustle and sparkle like a boss today. You know, you go on Instagram, you see all these empowering posts. It's so much more than that. The immense amount of work that self-belief requires is not an Instagram post. It is about really understanding your talents, your gifts, and then letting yourself advocate for them or express them.
And that's where you're going to introduce the 8 strengths, and you have the superpowers as well. So if we go through that, that'd be great. And what I might say is a specific chapter in the book, when you're going through each one of the strengths, then what I really like is you give different pieces of advice. So when you're at your best, know the demographics, when you can recognize yourself, steering clear of some of the downsides, how to course correct really good, and how to channel the superpower. So again, listeners, so much pragmatic advice in this. So let's go through it then. What are the 8 strengths, or the superpowers?
Yeah, so in our quantitative research, we found 8. And the first one is called leading. I set direction, I'm in charge, I inspire followership. The second one is performing, which is what I'm doing. It's extroversion, charisma, the exchange of energy between two people. These two forms of confidence are the most written about. They're the behavioral ones. I lead and I perform, right? And yet they represent less than 20% of our data set. And that is one of the big aha moments for me when we were developing the book, was, wow, we have been describing confidence in an incomplete manner. Right. And I love Dale Carnegie, by the way. He changed my life when I was 12 years old when I read that book for the first time. But his work only focuses on lead and perform. Does that mean 80% of us don't deserve to feel good about ourselves? So then the next set, the next two that I talk about the most often are achieving and knowing. Achieving, I get things done. I have a winner's mindset. I have an athlete's mindset. Practice makes perfect. Here's the target. I'm going to meet or exceed it. If I fail, I get back up and I do it all over again. The next one is knowing, which is I'm the smartest, most well-researched, most thoughtful person in the room. You want to build IKEA furniture with this person because they understand process and how to get things done. If you've ever seen the Disney movie Hidden Figures about the three Black women at NASA who sent a man to space, they were not classic forms of gravitas. The reason they had the confidence to stand in the room and do their work as quote unquote computers was knowing was their superpower. The next two are giving and believing. Giving, I support others. I'm empathetic. I'm nurturing. Believing, if you're a Ted Lasso fan, I don't know if Ted Lasso has made it across the pond, but Ted Lasso says in season one, I was underestimated my whole life because I'm not a classic commander type coach. I'm believing. I'm not here to win or lose. I'm here to help everyone become the best versions of themselves. And you see by season three, with his Believe poster, believing is his superpower. That's actually what's the core of what gives him the confidence to go to work every day. The next two and the last two are creating. That's my number one. Creating is my number one. This is, I believe in things before I can see them. I can will an idea into existence. I can create something from nothing. I'm a daughter of immigrants. I'm also an entrepreneur. You know, I tend to say a lot of immigrants tend to have this superpower. And the last one, which fewest number of people have globally, is called self-sustaining. I like myself. I don't need to impress you. I deserve this seat at the table. It's the quality most needed to ask for a raise or a favor. By the way, asking for a promotion is achieving. Here's why I deserve leadership roles. Here's why I deserve more accountability. Asking for a raise is, here's my market value, and I'm willing to walk away because someone else will give it to me. It's also the quality most needed to overcome criticism and objection and see feedback as a gift and not a stick of dynamite. It's almost like you're coated in Teflon. But together, all eight of these are a much more complete picture. It complements Myers-Briggs and DISC and Enneagram. It complements, they're all based on the same psychology. But we highlighted these eight because they fundamentally are the basis of self-belief, right? They are the ones that you go, you know what? A lot of people will come up to me after I give a talk and say, ah, my superpower is so boring. And I always say, what is it? And they go, I get things done on time. I said, oh my gosh, come work with me. I don't have achieving. Achieving is a superpower. And my mom looked at the list and she goes, oh, Lisa, one tsunami happened. Men make a speech. Women clean up the beach. Finally, we get credit for cleaning up the beach. But these other superpowers, you know, it's because we as a society have undervalued, taken them for granted, underestimated them. But I always say, if your superpower is giving and believing like Ted Lasso's is, why don't we celebrate that, right? All of us have a unique combination, a unique confidence language that powers how we've gotten this far.
And you mentioned self-sustaining there. So there's some people here and they're listening in and you mentioned Teflon with such ease. And there's some people, they're driving the cars or they're going for their walk and they're going, how do you get that? How do you get that self-sustaining superpower? How can I channel that? Or how do I do that?
I'm going to give you the Easter egg or the Trojan horse of the entire book. And this is, I don't say this explicitly in the book. The entire book is an exercise in self-sustaining. And that I think some people who have finished the book go, wow, I like myself finally. For the first time in my life, I really, really appreciate myself. And so self-sustaining, the reason why it's one of the hardest of the eight to get is it does require deep introspection, but not just taking my quiz. A lot of people will take the quiz and go, okay, I've got five superpowers. You know, great. And I'll say, well, do you believe them? Have you been underestimating or underleveraging yourself your whole life? And one of the exercises I have people do in the book, but also in person, is I say, take a moment that you're really proud of this year. It's almost like in Harry Potter, when Professor Snape says, cue a Patronus, think of the happiest moment of your life. I say, take a moment and let's deconstruct which of the superpowers you have and tie it to what drove that outcome. And they go, oh, you're right. Okay. I believe it. You know, I'm an entrepreneur. So one of the examples I use for myself, creating, my confidence language is creating, performing, leading. And then I've added giving and actually myself. That's why I said I started with three and now I have four and a half. I'm half self-sustaining now. I've been explicitly working on this because you write the book, you most need to read yourself, you know? And the example I use is my company, we make fashion. in March of 2020, the sales of my company were negative because we have a 30-day return policy. People sent back clothes that they weren't going to wear to the office. So we refunded more than we sold. And I looked at my superpowers and I said, my number one superpower is creating. Who can we help right now? Right now. And I pivoted the whole company to making hospital gowns and face masks for 72 days from April to July of 2020. And people go, how does this little fashion company do that? And I said, because I know my superpowers. The second thing I did is my second superpower is performing. And I put it out on LinkedIn. I said, the sales of my company are negative. If you have a company that needs face masks, direct message me and we will make them for you. And all of these people in my network said, I need 2,000, I need 800, I need 500. And that was something I was willing to do. I was not a superhero from that sense. I was totally willing to tell people the sales of my company are negative. Who can help us right now? And then my third superpower is leading. I know how to get resources together. By the way, if you notice, I'm not high on achieving. I'm not high on knowing. My team is. And they said, okay, Lisa says we're going here to save the company. Let's get the fabric. Let's get the sewers back in. Let's do a timeline. Let's figure out how to get this done. But I celebrate the superpowers I don't have because my teammates do. And that's where I think the real power comes. You can take the quiz and you can read about these superpowers, but then you've got to connect it to, oh, that's why I've driven these outcomes. You know, every time I face a setback in my own business, someone on my team goes, Lisa, we've been here before and you figured it out. So why wouldn't we be able to do this again? And I go, yeah, you're right. And I wrote the book on it. So why wouldn't we be able to solve this problem today?
I think that is an amazing story and a real example how you can reflect and use that quiz to say, okay, hold on here. What do we need to do? Now, the other side of that is the dark side then of a strength. So that's where, what are the downsides then I need to look out for the course correction? So take any one of them. Say, for example, creating, for example, is there a downside to that? Some people are listening.
Of course there's a downside.
How could there be? Creating is a good thing.
You know, all of these superpowers are wonderful. Like, let's just be clear. They're all great. But I think what happens with creating is you're a visionary. You see things before other people see them and you're incredibly impatient. Like, I can tell you, I know what my company looks like 10 years from now. And you're incredibly impatient about the people who don't have this particular superpower that they can't see it too. And you're so frustrated. You're like, wait, I want to go here. And we're only, you know, a mile away and we're only 100 feet in. And I'm so angry that we're not at a mile now. And so there's impatience. There is, why don't you see what I see? Why don't you believe in it, right? Doubters and naysayers. And so each one of these has a downside. If you're leading is your number one superpower, the downside is it's my way or the highway, right? You don't actually leave room for other people performing, which I'm doing for you now. You might suck all the air out of a room and it's all about me. And you don't leave room to learn anything about anyone else. Every one of these has a downside. And it was important for me not to just highlight the positives, because what I think it says, and you'll see this in the book, if there's a downside, oftentimes there's another superpower, another one of the eight that you might want to cultivate to offset it. So I always say leading, if you come across as too commanding, maybe you need to have a little bit of giving and believing. And I think that's why all these books have been written about leading from the heart or empathy or collaboration or emotional intelligence, is because there is a downside to just having leading as your superpower. Maybe you need to add a little bit of giving, a little believing, some of these other superpowers. Not that they all have to, it's not like Pokemon. You don't need to collect all eight, but being aware of all eight allows you to adjust your style, see it in other people. I do think seeing it in other people is really important. McKinsey Women in the Workplace report said that women are the reason why companies made it through the pandemic. Empathy, collaboration. So our qualities we call as giving and believing. But traditional HR scorecards may take those qualities for granted in women and not include them on the scorecard.
And that's the wonderful thing about this. It gives you that language so you can express yourself. It also, that self-understanding and self-knowing then, as you were saying earlier on, this is why this language is critical then.
It changes the workplace. So in chapter two, I write about, and if you haven't read it, you don't have to read the whole study, although I think she would want you to. A professor named Kelly Hsu at Yale School of Management released a really important study in the summer of 2022. It was good timing for my book that we could sneak it into the book. And she looked at 30,000 employee records. And she saw that men were rated very high on promotion potential, but low on performance and results. And women were the opposite. They were considered very high performers, but they were not promotable. And when she double-clicked on promotability, she realized it was defined as charisma and extroversion. And she said, those are subjective qualities. So when we look at the pay gap globally, the 40% that is correlated to promotion is highly subjective. And that, I think, is an example where, wow, why did introverts love the pandemic? Because they didn't have to do the water cooler talk that defined connection. They could just be evaluated for the quality of their work. And so when we look at all eight, it allows us to create scorecards that are much more balanced and fair. If you have a culture where, and that's why I think diverse communities and workplaces drive better outcomes, is because you have more superpowers to play with, and right?
That's great that you mentioned, you know, that sometimes it's the systemic issues within a workplace or even bias that might be in there, and especially how people are rated in different ways. And that brings us to the last part of the book that I found really interesting is leveling up then. And we, you know, and we're coming to the end of the podcast here. So I love that quote by Jane Park, life doesn't get easier, we just get stronger. Brilliant. Brilliant quote.
It's so true, right? Things don't get easier. We get stronger. I mean, I really love that. This is one of my best friends, Jane Park, who's a very successful entrepreneur. And I'm always beating myself up. And she goes, Lisa, let's just take a moment and talk about how strong you've gotten. And she's always says, there's no regrets, only learnings. And nothing is easier. Like even when you're growing a company, it just means there's more commas and zeros on every check. Right? It's not like the problems get smaller. In fact, they get bigger. But you've gotten stronger at handling those commas and zeros. And what we did in chapters 6 and 7 of the book is I said, okay, if you truly believe your confidence language, if you can stand in your power and know what you bring to the table, now you're ready to grow it. Now you're ready to take on more. And so in chapter 6, we take 30 situations in life and we tell you which superpower you need for which situation. Most people will say to me, oh, wow, that's great. I already have it. I just haven't trusted myself enough. Thanks, Lisa. I'm validated. Or they'll say, wow, I want to be able to do that better. So a lot of people come up to me and say, hey, I want to start my own business. And that's one of the 30 situations we tested. And I said, okay, do you have in your confidence language, leading, performing, creating, and self-sustaining? And as you now know, I have 3.5 of those. I don't have all 4, but I did it anyways. And they'll say, no, I'm achieving, giving, and knowing. And I said, well, you need a co-founder that can have those qualities, or you need to go and develop them. Maybe you need to stay in the workplace and develop those skills and do it on someone else's dime. But I really think it's important that we learn where to grow. I've just shared with you, I started with 3. I have 4.5. An example would be, I didn't have giving the first time I took the quiz. And when I talked to my team about it, they said, yeah, it would be great if you were a little bit more empathetic. And I said, okay, I can stop during the day and actually channel that quality. I can come across as very demanding and very commanding. And so over time, I've developed that into my arsenal. So I do think we grow. And then chapter 7, which is one of my favorite chapters, is we take 5 relationships in life and we tell you how to see other things like your boss, your spouse, your family members, your friends, your colleagues. So the best example I use in the book is my brother, my younger brother. We have opposite confidence languages, polar opposites. The 4 I have are the 4 he doesn't, and vice versa. And so the example I don't have in the book, but I tell, is when we go to dinner, his number one superpower is self-sustaining. He likes himself. He doesn't have to be the loudest voice in the room. He's not a performer. One of my number one is performing. So I will say to him, hey, are you having fun tonight? Are you having fun at dinner? Are you having fun? Because I need validation. I'm a people pleaser. I said, you would know if I wasn't having fun. I would have already left. The fact that I have stayed means I'm enjoying myself. Stop asking me. And he goes, but I know your confidence language. Every 30 minutes, I will tell you I'm having fun. Does that work out for us? I go, yes. Okay. That's so much better for me. But when you know the other person's confidence language, it kind of changes what makes them tick and what you can ask of them. And so that's also a fun way to use your confidence language.
That's a brilliant example. And then you use the example of demanding. So if someone is really ambitious, like you said, you're trying to be, you know what your company looks like in 10 years time. How do you slow down from that demanding piece? Like what is your ritual, or how do you remind yourself, I need to slow down so I can be empathetic?
Well, my team isn't afraid to tell me. Let me be clear. Let me all say, I cultivated a culture where people will tell me that I'm not being very kind in this moment. But one of the things that I have done for myself, and I think you write the book you most need to read yourself, as I can sit inside other people's stories. And if you truly believe everyone has those six forces, those inner critic, that inner critic in their head, and again, I now know that, it means that I can have empathy for wherever someone is on their journey. And it's not about slowing down. What I now do is I'll say, okay, I need everyone to get this done today, but I will take a moment and I'll say, why? Or are there other things in your life going on that may impede you from staying late tonight? You know, that there's ways in which I've learned to bring giving to the table. I still haven't worked on believing. I really want my next, after I've nailed self-sustaining, believing is my next superpower. And I've been through a lot of therapy, William, so I can tell you why. But I'm raised by a tiger mom. Right? I raised by a tiger mom who's a pessimist, who's like, you're never good enough, right? Like, I came home one day with an A double plus in chemistry. And her first question was like, where's the third plus? You go back and talk to that science teacher and ask her what extra credit you can do to get the third plus. You know, that means you're not really an optimist, right? You're like, oh, it's never good enough. So I've been working, my next one after self-sustaining is I'll be working on believing, which is seeing positive intent. If things don't get right, they weren't meant to be. Seeing the best in situations, not naturally assuming the worst in a situation. So that'll be the fifth one that I collect in the next year.
And that's something that people might tuning in here might be thinking about, my inner critic here. And sometimes it's not my voice that I'm hearing. It's somebody else's expectations. And no, it's mine.
Well, so here's the thing. Here's the thing that I will tell you. I do this fun audience exercise. I call it the inner critic exercise. And, you know, you always come up with something after the book is published. I'm like, I'm going to include this in the paperback edition. One of the things that I think is important is that we have to learn how to have conversations with our inner critic. And the old thinking was you could wave it away, right? I wouldn't have given you that assignment if I didn't believe in you. You should just believe in yourself. Well, if you know your confidence language, if you're strong enough to have a conversation with your inner critic, what you can do is a couple things. One is give it a name. Actually, the name of my inner critic is Fred. He was my bully in high school. If he's listening, you were my bully in high school. But I think when you name it, you start to laugh at it, right? I actually have people, when I do workshops, name their inner critic because it kind of takes away its power. If you can say Voldemort, you're not afraid of Voldemort. And then what I tell people to do is, okay, let your inner critic tell you what the worst case scenario is. Let all the fears out. Just say all which six forces are working against me. Let them have a voice, because you'll realize that voice is harsh, pessimistic, backwards looking, and you can drown it out with the megaphone of your superpowers. So if I go back to the example I used around negative sales, worst case scenario, I'm going to have to close down the company. I'm going to have to lay everyone off. I'm going to have to talk to my angel investors, you know, all the things. And then you look at your superpowers and you go, but wait, I'm going to figure out a new business line that we could execute in less than a week. I have a lot of friends in the world. I'm going to ask them for help. You know, you realize how strong you are. And when you do this exercise, it's here's the worst case. Here's the best case based on my confidence language. And what you realize is the most likely case is closer to best because you're now in control. You have gas in the tank that you can be a speedboat when everyone else is an aircraft carrier.
That is such an insightful piece there. And I love that megaphone with your confidence language. How do you drown out that bully? And what was that bully's name again? Freddie, is it?
Fred. Yes, he knows Fred. Who he is.
shame on you, Fred.
Oh no, Fred is my. It's Fred. Fred is the fuel for my hate fire. It's fine.
Well, Lisa Sun, this has been a wonderful conversation. And if people were to find more about you, Gravitas, and your book, how might they do so?
Well, the first place is head to myconfidencelanguage.com and take the quiz. It's a self-affirming inventory of your strengths. It'll just be fun. I always say at the holidays, if you're sitting around with your family, send the quiz. It's 5 minutes. Everyone should learn their superpowers as a family. And then you can find us at gravitasnewyork.com and on Instagram at Lisa El Sun and at Gravitas New York.
Lisa, thank you so much for your time today. It was such a wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much, William.
Thanks for listening to the Workplace Podcast with your host, William Gorlis. Our special thanks to this episode's guest for sharing their expertise with us. If you enjoyed this episode, please download and share it. For updates on future episodes and to get in contact with us about any workplace topics, please follow Yellowwood on LinkedIn and Twitter at Different Paths. As always, you can head over to yellowwood.ie for any other information. Yellowwood, your external learning and development partner, provider of executive coaching, facilitation, and training. Take a different path to success with your career, leadership, team, and organization.